በአፍሪካ ትምህርት እንዲስፋፋ የሚደረገው ስብሰባ በሚከፈትበት
This is the voice of Emperor Haile Selassie of Ethiopia.
ጉባኤውን ልንከፍትላችሁ
He is welcoming to his capital city, Addis Ababa, a group of visitors from virtually every African state and territory, and from countries beyond the continent. Referring to the reason for their visit, and to the sort of people they are, the emperor said,
"Aun kazi letasabassabachhut mulu wayachhunna chilotachhun letimirt sira
We know that we need not stress to you, men and women, for whom education is a compelling and all-consuming career, the importance of education to the cause of peace and freedom throughout the world, and particularly to the peoples of the less developed nations on this planet. The events of the Year of Africa, the tragic and the happy events alike, have served to underscore the significance of the quest for knowledge, as providing the foundation upon which free men will build a peaceful world.
United Nations Radio presents The Seeds of Skill, a portrait of education in Africa today and tomorrow, as it was drawn at a recent conference convened by the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization and the UN Economic Commission for Africa. A conference which sowed the seeds of skill. The scene is Africa Hall, an Addis Ababa building so new, so fresh in concept and construction, that it is in itself a symbol of the reawakened continent. Within it, too, there is a striking symbol, a stained glass window covering 150 square meters of the eastern wall of the main lobby. Designed by a young Ethiopian artist, it depicts Africa past, present, and future. With the morning sun streaming through it, the marble floor is flecked and splashed with colors, each one as rich and luminous as the indigo dyes of Kano. But those who came to confer at Africa Hall, the ministers and directors of education in the African states, and the observers from other interested countries, were not concerned with symbolism. They had come to describe their difficulties, to make an inventory of their educational needs, and to draft a master plan to meet them. Reality sat in every chair as the Director General of UNESCO, Dr. Vittorino Veronese, delivered the opening address.
Il apparaît d'ores et déjà certain.
Even at this early stage, there appears to be no doubt that the African countries, profiting by the historical coincidence of their almost simultaneous accession to independence, in a world already rich in experience of development and well organized for international cooperation, are determined to give their plans a rational basis, that is, to base them on the training of Africans. It is by producing its own technicians, engineers, scientists, teachers, administrators, doctors, and all the subordinate staff required by modern states that the new Africa will be built up. Education is thus the very base of the pyramid which is to rise on African soil.
At present, that base is weak, for a variety of reasons and in a variety of ways. But first, the overall situation. It was summarized in the report of one of the working commissions at the conference, presented by the Permanent Undersecretary in the Ministry of Education in Sierra Leone, Mr. H.A. Clark.
In some countries, less than 3% of the school-age population are enrolled in primary schools of various stages of efficiency. In others, and these are in the minority, over 70% of the school-age population are enrolled. Taking a broad average, it will be observed that the overall percentage of enrollment works out at less than 40%. In other words, 2 out of 5 children receive primary education in the region now being considered.
That is tropical Africa. On the situation at the secondary level, Mr. Clark had this to report.
Here, the school-age population receiving education at the second level varies from 0.1% to about 30% in more fortunate countries. The average figure for all the territories under review works out at less than 3%. In other words, 3 children out of 100 receive secondary education.
At the top level, the situation is even worse.
If we study the corresponding statistics in respect of higher education, it immediately becomes apparent that less than 1 person out of every 1,000 is provided for in the corresponding age group. Facilities are so meager that a greater proportion of our higher educational training has to be undertaken in institutions abroad. This factor illustrates how expensive this type of education is in the very long term, since it retards development of facilities in Africa.
Now, what, by way of contrast, are the ideal, or at least the desirable, figures at each of the three levels? One of the UNESCO consultants at the conference was Professor Arthur Lewis, principal of the University College of the West Indies. In a paper he wrote on education and economic development, he gave this answer.
If judged by genetic intellectual endowment only, at least 5% of all children can get a bachelor's degree at British university level. At least 20% can benefit from secondary grammar school education, and 99% should go through primary school. Many educators would place the first 2 percentages higher, and many of the developed countries do indeed provide university education for more than 5%, and secondary education for more than 20%.
Though this may be the ideal or desirable level, an underdeveloped or developing country faces a number of problems in reaching it. Not the least of them is the capacity of the economy to absorb educated and qualified people, to have jobs ready for them when they finish school. As Professor Lewis pointed out in his paper,
in the long run, the community can absorb any quantity of education. In the short run, an oversupply of any category of educated people leads to unemployment in that category,
with, of course, predictably bad social effects. One was referred to by Mr. J.C. Makpayem, Minister of Education in the Central African Republic, speaking for his own country and the Republic of Chad.
En effet, à l'issue de l'année terminale des classes primaires, les élèves qui ne réussissent pas...
What happens is that, at the end of the school year, those pupils who do not succeed in getting into the very few post-primary establishments desert the rural communities for the big urban centers. The problem of returning them to the country or finding them employment in the town is an urgent one.
All of which underscores the absolute necessity to keep educational development in step with economic development in general, a point that was clearly appreciated at the conference. But to get back to the reasons for the weakness of the base upon which the African pyramid will rise, some are shared by all the countries. At the same time, each country has individual problems, some inherited from the past, and some the result of local physical or cultural conditions. From the inventory of needs, some examples.
So far, the greatest need in Africa is the acute shortage of teachers. And this acute shortage of teachers is based on the availability of staff to train the teachers.
Mr. Dewona Hammond, President of the Conference and Minister of Education and Social Welfare in Ghana.
Many things had been said, but I think the key need is acute shortage of teachers.
Coupled with that, a shortage of adequate school buildings and equipment. Next, Mr. Ekwabe Jean, Minister of Education, Cameroon.
Le puissance coloniale même si elles apportaient à l'œuvre de scolarisation du désintéressement.
The colonial powers, even if they took part in educational work out of goodwill and in a spirit of disinterest, did not feel called upon to provide for the profound needs of the country. They had their own technicians, and the economic life of the country was completely warped. The school was a school for officials, not for the people and the nation.
With a problem peculiar to his country, Mr. Ziada Abab, Minister of Education in the Sudan.
The nomadic section of our population certainly create a number of educational and special problems. In the educational field, the following are the most important. A. The difficulty of assembling enough boys and girls in one area in order to open a school for them or to give them any form of instruction. B. Even if the number of boys and girls at a certain time and a certain place is large enough, there is no guarantee that this state of affairs will continue, because these nomads do not move on a tribal basis, but on a household basis. It is true that ultimately the whole tribe will move, but this is done gradually and according to the discretion of each household.
Mr. Makpayen again, describing a state of affairs found in more than just the two countries he mentions.
L'organisation de l'enseignement est encore incomplète au Tchad et en République centrafricaine.
Teaching is not yet properly organized in Chad or in the Central African Republic. Primary education is developing satisfactorily, but has no proper outlet in secondary education, which constitutes a real bottleneck. The technical education given in each of our states finds no outlet in the field of private business and just vegetates while waiting to be adapted to our national needs.
Another problem related to the shortage of teachers in Africa: the necessity at present to rely very largely on the service of people from other countries. The Minister for Education in Nigeria, Mr. Nwachukwu, pinpoints it like this.
We want to Africanize the staff in our higher institutions. Only few of them are Africans. We have never been able to get from overseas the number of high-level manpower that we need. As years go by, there will be exchange of scholars. But just now, we need to train more and more Africans to man our secondary schools and university colleges.
Next, Mr. John P. Mitchell, Undersecretary of Public Instruction in Liberia, referring to yet another difficulty facing many African countries, the language difficulty.
A number of African languages possess a considerable and expanding literature and are used for education. Others can be similarly developed and used. However, in most countries of tropical Africa, there are so many languages, some spoken by comparatively small groups, that it is impracticable to use them all for literacy.
The Addis Ababa conference revealed a lot more problems than these, but here just one more must suffice. When just now Mr. Nwachukwu spoke of the need to Africanize the teaching staff in Nigeria, he touched on one aspect of a broad subject which every delegate talked about, that is, Africanization in general. Here, for example, is Mr. Michel Aounmenou, Minister of Education in Dahomey.
Notre décision de changer les perspectives traditionnelles de l'enseignement signifie clairement notre volonté.
Our decision to change the traditional perspectives in teaching clearly shows how anxious we are to form an alert, strong generation of Dahomeyans. The first essential for this is to adapt the program to conform with the cultural and social realities of the African culture today.
In specific terms, the traditional perspectives are, in most cases, the perspectives of the former colonial powers. Education in Africa was based on and modelled after education in Europe. A case in point, the situation in Ghana, as described by Mr. Duwona Hammond.
Hitherto, the geography we learn, the history we learn, is history concerning the building of the British Empire, the American Revolution, the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, that sort of thing. And also, formerly, the average Ghanaian, then we were called Gold Coasters, can tell you every position of a state in the USA or in Europe or in Asia, whilst that of Africa or our own country, Gold Coast, has little or no knowledge. Now the emphasis in our country, first Ghana, and then the African continent.
So Africanization is the new perspective. Africanization without chauvinism, as Mr. Clark of Sierra Leone put it.
We're now sailing the world's stream, and we can't afford entirely to cast overboard all ideas of the outside world, of which we are, of course, a part.
Time now to turn to the positive side of the picture, to the second reason for the Addis Ababa conference, the master plan to meet the great and pressing needs. Each country naturally has its own educational development plan, worked out in terms of priorities and within the invariably restricting limits of national income, which is not to say that they're not spending all they can on education. Some African governments are devoting as much as 23% of their budgets to it. To take just one example of vigorous action, in describing Nigeria's plan for the immediate future, the minister, Mr. Nwachukwu, said this.
5 universities are to be built. National high schools are to be dotted all over the country. Teacher training colleges are to be expanded. The capital costs alone amount to some £75 million. Such a program is indeed massive because we are not a wealthy country by European standards.
The master plan, the Addis Ababa plan, is in many respects a synthesis and an extension into the international arena of all the national plans. It contains, in fact, 2 plans, short-term and long-term. For an outline of them, here again is Mr. Clark.
The short-term plan, briefly summarized, aims at increasing enrollment at the primary level gradually from about 40% to 51% in 5 years. In terms of numbers, this modest target proposes to increase current enrollment from about 11 million primary school pupils to over 15 million. During this short time period, my commission proposes to place high on the priority list the expansion of education at the second level so as to be able to produce more rapidly an increase in the professional classes, administrators, teachers, nurses, the clerical cadre in government and non-government organizations, including banking and commerce, as we believe that these various categories must operate effectively as the backbone of the region's development.
And for higher education during the short-term plan?
Emphasis will be placed upon establishing short-term and vocational courses at the non-university level during this short-term period.
Now the long-term plan, which looks ahead to 1980 and sets these objectives.
1. 100% universal and free primary education. 2. Education at second level to be made available for 30% of the children who complete the primary school and to be distributed as follows. 10% in full academic courses of 6 years' duration. 20% to be enrolled in other types of schools varying in curricula between general, vocational, technical and teacher training courses of 3 years' duration. We propose in the long term that 20% of pupils completing the full secondary academic course of 6 years will go on to higher education. We hope that it will be possible to educate about 9/10 of this number in Africa and that 60% of university students will be enrolled in scientific and technological faculties.
A bold plan, and one that is going to need money. More money than the African states themselves can supply at present. They are willing and eager to shoulder the bulk of the burden themselves. They are willing because they recognize the effort is in their own interests economically, as an investment, and out of self-respect.
The Commission recommends that each country should endeavor to raise its expenditure on education from about 3% of the national income to 4% by 1965, and thereafter to 6% by the end of 1980.
But the international community will have to help even more than it has in the past and is helping now. In measuring the financial implications of the plan, the drafters came up with these figures as the likely deficits after the African states themselves have spent all they can.
In 1961, $140 million, rising to $450 million by 1965, and to nearly $1 billion by 1970. After that, the figure should decline until by 1980, it should be under 400 million. A little later, the takeoff stage should be reached, and the need for foreign aid should be no more.
Naturally, the question arises, is it realistic to expect the international community to provide such funds, however keenly it may understand the needs and however sympathetic it may be towards the planned objectives? The great powers were all represented at the Addis Ababa conference. So were several other non-African states. All indicated a readiness to help, and to do so generously. But words of caution were also spoken. Mr. Thompson, for example, the Parliamentary Secretary of the Ministry of Education in the United Kingdom.
We here are ardent workers in the cause of education. That's the badge that admits us. But we shouldn't let our enthusiasm for education blind us to the fact that there are other crying needs to be met. We compete with enthusiasts for other good causes. We need more and better hospitals and better health services. We need better roads and better means of communication. We need better housing. Even within the field of education itself, we must establish firm priorities and stick to them. Most of all, you must be clear that what you ask for from abroad is what you most need. We must be balanced in our enthusiasm. We must, too, not be impatient for quick results. It takes time to develop trained manpower.
It takes time. It always has, and it still does. But need this always be so? Could not the future, perhaps, see changes in the traditional methods of education which might speed up the process and, at the same time, reduce the cost? If such changes are on the horizon, their impact in Africa could be tremendous. And there was some evidence at the conference that they are. This statement, for example.
If the industrial and agricultural revolutions of the past belonged to the older nations of Europe and North America, the educational revolution of the future can belong to the younger nations of Africa, Asia, and Latin America.
This is Mr. Philip Coombs, Assistant Secretary of State for Educational and Cultural Affairs in the United States government and leader of the U.S. delegation.
We agree thoroughly with the frequently expressed insistence in this conference that the new nations of Africa must work out their own educational systems, curricula, and methods to fit their own needs and resources. To accomplish this, there must be great breakthroughs in the methods of teaching and learning. Such breakthroughs will render obsolete and irrelevant any cost calculations of today based on the status quo of educational techniques inherited from the past. New nations must, and I am convinced they can, discover new, low-cost ways to spread access to good quality education even more rapidly than is contemplated in many of the projections presented at the conference.
This line of thinking extends beyond the use of the various audio-visual aids to education, which have, in recent years, influenced teaching techniques so much. It forecasts, among other developments, the widespread application of a new technique called programmed learning, through the use of what are rather incorrectly called teaching machines. Programmed learning is the result of work by a number of experimental psychologists, and although it was not discussed as a particular item on the Addis Ababa agenda, its possibilities did arouse the interest of the delegations. To explain it briefly, here is Mr. Maurice Mitchell of Encyclopedia Britannica Films, who was a UNESCO consultant at the conference on the technological aspects of education.
The experimental psychologist says that there is a lot of statistical evidence to support the belief that the average child in the average classroom is really learning only between 8 and 20% of the time, that the balance of that classroom time is a highly inefficient learning period. Now, says the experimental psychologist, the ideal learning situation is the tutorial system, the relationship between a single student and a single teacher. In this situation, he says, the teacher will always teach the student at the student's individual rate of learning. He can't teach him any faster, and the student himself will impel the tutor to teach him more rapidly if he's moving too slowly.
But there's a shortage of teachers in Africa and everywhere else, so this ideal relationship is impossible, and probably always will be. And this is where the so-called teaching machine and programming come into the picture.
In programming, a crack subject matter specialist and a crack experimental psychologist sit down together with a course in the curriculum and fragment it. They break it into tiny bits woven together in a logical sequence. Each of these bits in programming is commonly called a frame. Each frame consists of a simple statement or a question. And the student, when the program is finished, works his way through these frames one at a time. If the frames are properly written, properly interwoven, contain the right kinds of review, the right kinds of stimuli for learning, and properly exposed to classroom testing, then it is possible with a good program for a student to work his way through an average 100 frames without making more than two or three mistakes. And I'm talking now about a student of ordinary learning and reading ability. Well, then, the student sits down by himself and moves through this program, which is usually offered to him in a simple printed form, in which he can see the questions but not the answers until he has answered the questions and then immediately look at the answers to see that he has answered properly. It's possible for a student to sit down, move through the entire course at his own rate of speed, and the kinds of research we are now doing, some of it extremely extensive, indicate that an ordinary student working an hour a day in a classroom in this fashion, with no textbook, with no teacher, with no homework, with no outside learning activity in the subject matter, will move through the ordinary year of subject matter in about 6 months. Indeed, the bright students will move through a year of subject matter in as little as 12 weeks.
Which means, of course, not only a saving of time, but of money. The technique also frees the teacher from the donkey work of his job. He can become a tutor, helping the students who need help on an individual basis and putting the subject in its true perspective by discussing its implications and applications. Mr. Mitchell was convinced of the value of programmed learning for Africa. He put it this way.
The great challenge for them is to affect economies in speed, which may be of far greater value to them than money, by embracing these new technological devices at the outset and avoiding the wasteful investment of dollars hard to come by and people hard to replace in facilities that just won't survive the future.
Whether the African states will embrace them is obviously their own affair. As one delegate remarked, they're interested in all methods, as long as they're effective. And anyway, as we said just now, the technological aspects of education formed only a part of the picture which emerged from Africa Hall. The total picture is, first and foremost, a picture of enormous needs. But they are needs that can be met, and with the Addis Ababa plan, the first steps have been taken. The seeds have been sown. From them, the skills will grow, and with them, the welfare of a continent that has known a long, dark age.
The Seeds of Skill was a portrait of education in Africa today and tomorrow, based on recordings made at a recent UNESCO ECA conference of African states. The program was produced by the international staff of United Nations Radio in New York.